Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Afternoon, everybody. It is a day where, for all the valid reasons, we're going to spend a fair amount of time on a political assassination, a story which broke while we were on the air yesterday at about 1:30, excuse me. And sadly, in the hours after we were done, the news was announced that Charlie Kirk was murdered. And the video is out there. Charlie Kirk had become a very influential conservative. Extraordinary success with the president in the last election. There's no denying that. Charlie Kirk's influence on that. You look at with younger voters in swing states from where Joe Biden was in 2020 to where Kamala Harris was in 2024 against the same opponent, Donald Trump. Younger voters swung 24%. Was all of that 100% tied to Charlie Kirk? No, but this was a heavy emphasis for him becoming more popular, more influential by the day. And here he is at a campus exchanging in ideas. And there are a number of Charlie Kirk's ideas that I couldn't have disagreed with more. But the idea that you can't go to a college campus without getting assassinated is disgusting. It is awful. And it should not matter if you agree with Charlie Kirk's politics in any way to condemn this and say we have to be better than this. And we have to stop just saying we have to be better than this. We have to make some adjustments. They're not easy. To find enough people to come together is not easy. But whether it's the Hortmans, whether it's attacks in cities, whether it's an individual trying to engage in ideas of thoughts, including with people who oppose him, and he gets brutally murdered, it is a sad, sad stretch for our country. We'll talk about this a lot today, including right here at the start, with a man who is incredibly kind to us with his time because he is so essential on days like this. It's our friend Jimmy Galliano is here, 25 years with the FBI, just completed two terms as a mayor in New York. And Jimmy, on days like this, I thank you so much for going on. The FBI, about an hour and 10 minutes ago, released a photo trying to enlist the public, classifying this as a person of interest. What are your thoughts on the photo and what the FBI has said so far today?
Well, first of all, Chad, good to join you. I hate that it's always under these kind of circumstances, but I did appreciate the appropriate way you kind of framed this today. I was in New York City this morning, and it's the same place I was 24 years ago on 9/11. Yeah. I know you're not having me on for a 9/11 remembrance or recollections, but my gosh, to your point, on that day we lost 3,000 Americans because of political and ideological differences. And what happened yesterday afternoon on a campus in Utah was something similar from everything that we can tell right now. And we want to be careful, and, you know, as a retired FBI agent, we try not to leap to conclusions, and obviously things can lead you in one direction, and as you aptly pointed out, the FBI has released a photo, a still image, actually two of them, of a person of interest, and for your listeners, well, what the heck does that mean? What's a person of interest? Is he a suspect? Well, he could be wanted because he's a material witness. But from everything I'm hearing through channels is this is the suspect. This is the person that they are seeking to question regarding this just utterly horrific act yesterday, Chad.
What does it say about the necessary security now, Jimmy, where we witnessed not one but two attempts on Donald Trump's life last year? We witnessed in this city Vance Belter going to multiple homes, trying to kill the Hoffmans, killing the Hortmans. And here's Charlie Kirk, who, because of his success, because of his notoriety, because of individuals who don't agree with him, I know he brings his own security, but you can't cover everything. What do we have to look at now, Jimmy, regarding just security and just private citizens, let alone politicians, when they want to speak out or when they want to just go about and live their everyday life?
Well, you know, Chad, I always hate to use, you know, cliches and, you know, trite phraseology. But, you know, when you talk about a new normal, you know, this country is no stranger to political violence. I mean, in our history, we're coming up on 250 years old as a fledgling democracy. We've had four presidents. We've only had 47. We've had four of them that were assassinated while in office. And you highlighted some of the other, you know, attacks or attempted assassinations. And political violence is something that, you know, in a democracy where we profess fealty to democratic principles, where the best man, the best woman should win the job, the person that has the most votes, that has the most constituency, should win, and we can disagree vigorously. And look, I also heard what you said about Charlie Kirk, and you and I probably disagree with some of the things he said. We agree with some of the things he said. But the fact is, yeah, Charlie Kirk always argued that, hey, let's meet in the public square. Let's not roll our sleeves up and go to fist.
Correct.
But let's talk about this. And that's what you do every day on the radio. You talk about things. You bring them up. You discuss things. You debate them. And that's the sad thing. Now, to your question about security, here's the problem. Charlie Kirk is not a protected government official. So there was no Secret Service sweep there. There were no drones flying over campus to make sure that none of the rooftops were occupied by a sniper. There wasn't screening like you would have at a presidential event where everybody goes through a magnetometer. There were no bomb sniffing dogs. And yes, Charlie did have a security detail. He did take his security seriously. He knew he was the subject of threats. And he did. And I think he had a detail out there. I don't want to criticize the police department, the police force, because I'm not out there boots on the ground in Utah. I don't know what their resources were. I don't know what the threat indicators were at the time. But my understanding is you had 3,000 people gathered in a relatively small space on a campus, and you had six police officers out there. Now, if you do the math, it just doesn't stack up. Now, look, if you'd have put 20 or 30 people out there, would that have stopped this? I don't know. But, yes, is this something in the future that needs to be looked at? It's sad that we don't need to just worry about security for our elected officials. We also have to worry about security for people who talk about politics and policy.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about yesterday when the FBI brought in a couple people. And even, Jimmy, when we're on the air yesterday, it was reported quickly that they had apprehended someone. And my default, and I think it was a mistake, was, okay, they have the shooter. It seemed like this was close, and they have the person. We since have found out that they've let those individuals go. We don't know the depth of those conversations. I did see in their press conference today one of the law enforcement officers encouraging people to stop harassing these individuals. So that, I think, is a pretty good indication they're trying to let these folks go on with the rest of their lives. What does it say to you about the initial arrest and the amount of information they've shared so far?
Yeah, so, you know, there's always a fine needle that you have to thread in regards to how much information released to the public, what's important to crowdsource, get the information out as quickly as possible because if it's a public safety consideration, or you need the public to crowdsource something, like in the case of releasing these two still photographs right now, to try to have somebody say, hey, I know that guy, he's my neighbor. Or, hey, I know that guy, I stood next to him down on the ground, you know, out in front of the tent where Charlie Kirk was. Having said that, I think there's always a knee-jerk reaction in everything, right? The pendulum always swings too far one way and then over course corrects the other way. I think that what Director Kash Patel has tried to do, and he's doing it in his mind for transparency purposes and to speak truth to power, is he feels that in the past, you know, the FBI was very circumspect about what information they released regarding motive. And yesterday when he jumped out and made that announcement, I think, one, yes, that could help quell public fears that there might be a madman on the loose, which obviously this guy still is on the loose, but I think it was premature. There's a distinct difference between a person of interest and a suspect. Now, a suspect is not guilty. A suspect is not, you know, necessarily the person who did the heinous crime, but a person of interest is somebody that could just be a material witness. So I think putting that out there that we have somebody in custody and law enforcement is interviewing them now, I think it was premature because then he had to immediately walk it back in another tweet. And then obviously the director of public safety in Utah had to do, and the Utah governor had to do the same thing. It's a tough job. They're doing this as this thing is unfolding, Chad. But yes, I thought that might have been, I hate to use the term sloppy, but I think that could have been handled a little better.
Couple last points with Jimmy Galeano. So kind to join us. 25 years of FBI experience. And so on a day like this, when the country is reacting and reeling and trying to learn more about this investigation, reports, Jimmy, in the last hour or so about potentially a second person may have been on this roof at this point. How much of the information you just talked about, the information shared, and was it sloppy, was it not sloppy? Where is this balance, Jimmy, where you know the public may know something about this individual, and there might be key parts where this could change the investigation, and how far you go, including reports of maybe another person potentially on the rooftop?
Sure, and that's something that I dealt with as an FBI official when I had to make comments to the media in regards to an ongoing investigation. You certainly don't want to tip off the perpetrator or perpetrators. But at the same token, you need help in this instance. Look, Chad, there were 3,000 people at this event. And if you've watched the videos like all of us have seen online,
yes.
I mean, half of them or more had their camera phones up and they were videoing mm-hmm. the event. So the amount of video, whether it was security camera footage from the campus itself or whether or not it was, you know, from a civilian that just happened to be there in attendance, that has to be ground through to determine, hey, what's a dead end and what's a live lead. And it is a tough job, and that's why, you know me, I like to level criticism where it's due, but I'm also really careful and cautious in the immediate aftermath because I've been there and I know how tough it is where you want to make sure the public is, one, first and foremost, safe. Number two, that the public is not fearful unduly, meaning that, you know, you don't let them know that there isn't a continuing threat as soon as possible. And then number three, you don't tip off the bad guys so that they can either escape or hurt the good guys. And then number four, you need to rely on the public. In this information, this digital information age, you need to rely on the public to crowdsource things like that. And those are the four things that you've got to kind of wrap your brain around and figure out the right, you know, the right mixture. And I think that's the tough thing for officials right now out in Utah, Chad.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Stay safe, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good, Chad. Take care.
James Galeano, 25 years FBI experience, giving us great insight on what the investigation might be like, security, and other questions. You want to react to what Jimmy had to say? This is a topic we will discuss throughout the show. Will we only talk about it? No, but it will be by far the number one topic. In fact, Major Garrett is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so on the D.C. side, but we're going to look at your texts and your comments all day long. 651-461-9226.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.